John Tilley. My Radio 1.
From its launch in 1967 right through the 70s to the mid-80s, BBC Radio 1 was probably the world's biggest music station. In this series, I'll be introducing you to many of the people behind the network's success during those golden years as they each tell the story of their Radio 1. And for this guest, we've even had a special jingle made.
Hi, Sean. Lovely to see you.
How's it to be back? Because you're literally around the corner from where all the magic happened.
It's always good to be here, my friend.
Bruno Brooks!
And how are you? Hope you're enjoying your Boxing Day. It's now time for a special music show, the time when the Radio 1 DJs put their head on the block and choose their top three records of 1984. Music today chosen by Annie Nightingale, Dave Lee Travis, Janice Long, Steve Wright, Adrian John, Tommy Vance, Peter Fowle, Andy Peebles, Bruno Brooks, Robbie Vincent, Mike Reed, John Peel, and Gary Davis. But first off, it's Simon Bates.
So obviously it was a radio station that you listened to, as so many other people did. Who were your particular broadcasting heroes, though, when you were dreaming of being at the BBC?
Well, Tony Blackburn was undoubtedly the first influence, because in terms of wanting to possibly do what he does, that would only be a dream. But, you know, I often sort of said to myself, I'd love to do that.
Tony Blackburn!
I don't believe a word of it, though, do you? Workers' call time.
It's a great good morning.
Yes, good morning to you, and welcome along to all those of you hard at work, or even if you're just at work, nice to have you with us.
I think one of the reasons why Tony connected, and he still does to a certain degree in the same way, it was the fact that he's just happy. This guy didn't seem to have any issues. In a household, there's always issues, and particularly when you're a teenager growing up. You know, I had a bedroom over the garage, well out of the way from the rest of the family, not by my choice, by their choice. You know, the thing I really did value in my little space was that radio. And as I got to understand radio a little bit more, it was not just music, obviously, as a teenager, but it was these guys that were huge personalities. And Tony Blackburn, for me, it just made me feel good about myself, just even it had this sunny sound even though it was a rainy day, and I it's so simple to make people feel that much better.
24 and a half minutes past nine.
Tony Blackburn's Junior Choice Competition Time.
And today's competition sent in by Martin Watmog, I think that is there, 89 years old, at Victoria Street, Radcliffe in Manchester. Thanks a lot, Martin, and a Junior Choice prize on the way to you. And
people like Noel Edmonds. Noel is incredibly talented, very intelligent, some great ideas, had a tremendous career in both radio and television, you know, unique in many respects.
14 and a half minutes before 8 o'clock, and Darts, the boy from New York City.
Noel Edmonds, school report.
Yes, the last school report. I thought we'd have some emotional music. Just having a little tinkle at the Radio 1 piano.
Johnny Walker, you know, when I was washing cars for my dad during the 70s, and the chart was on during the afternoons, a lunchtime chart, I think it was broke. You know, it's legendary.
And the top five, up eight places to number five, Angie Baby from Helen Reddy. Down two at number four, Goodbye My Love, The Glitter Band. No change at number three, Sugar Candy Kisses from Mac and Katie Kassoon. Up six places to number two, Please Mr. Postman from The Carpenters. 247 metres, you're tuned to Radio 1, it's now exactly 1 o'clock.
Radio 1, it's number 1.
Number one single on the Radio 1 chart for the third week running, this is Pilot and January.
It was on every radio, everywhere.
And then after Johnny, Paul Burnett.
Well, Paul again was an influence.
Because this is a Friday and it's 1 o'clock, and it's always the tradition on this particular show to play the current number one selling single in the United States. And this is the one. Almost as much money as the film. It's Miko with the Star Wars theme.
What I liked about Paul is all the little glint in his eye.
Yeah.
Very little cheeky glint in his eye. And that came through on air. You know, it's a bit of magic.
Great disco sound from Trance. Disco Inferno. Like
I said yesterday in the Hot 100 show, talking of infernos, when I came out of the disco in Grimsby on Monday night, I mean, there were fires all over the place, bonfires up and down the country. I'll tell you, I put out 12 between here and Grimsby by the time I got into London. I don't know. Imagine how embarrassed I was when I found out who started it all. Anyway, 12 minutes past the hour of 1 o'clock on 247.
And then at night time, Radio Luxembourg was a massive influence. I got the impression it really was coming from Luxembourg because the reception was that bad. You know, I thought they need a stronger transmitter, whatever it is and however they do it. But I was prepared to put up with it.
Well, the top 30 records in Luxembourg this week, that's The Teardrop Explodes. The Olympical Reward. We'll continue the countdown after the news on 208. The precise time is now exactly 10 o'clock GMT by my Seiko Quartz wristwatch.
Compiled from news agencies around the world, this is Radio Luxembourg News.
And there was something incredibly connecting with what I heard in those evenings when I couldn't sleep. And this was all becoming more than enjoyment. It was becoming quite influential on who I was. And remember, I was already a DJ, you know, mobile discos, building my own twin deck units, a wedding to a country club, to a something to something. But the one focus was becoming stronger and stronger and stronger, that I felt that I was going to be one of these people that were put on the planet to do what these guys are doing so well. That was a strong feeling. And to some extent, it was getting in the way of my education. I was privileged to go to a private school, albeit I wasn't doing very well. I think it was fair to say, my dad said this to me at the time, you know, you're distracted. And I became even more distracted when he was asked me to go and work at his car wash for a couple of quid a day. That was very different. But yeah, massive influence on me, Radio Luxembourg.
Right, so there you are, making quite a name for yourself, doing all these discos and town halls and what have you across Stoke-on-Trent. But that's not exactly how you managed to get into your local BBC, is it?
Well, it was a bit of an accident. It started off in that I, like all of us, I was badgering Radio Stoke in any way, which way, to just somehow get some experience there. You know, how could I get involved with doing interviews? And by default, I was asked if I would, you know, take a ewer and go and interview one of the bands at the Victoria Hall in Stoke, which I gladly did. I had no idea how to edit it. I had no idea who I was reporting to, except that I was asked to go to Stoke, and if you want to edit it, go ahead. And I ended up asking somebody if they'd help me do it with a razor blade and so on and so forth. It was a pretty poor attempt, but amazingly they played it. And it kind of went on to me having my own show on a Sunday afternoon, which was called Bruno's 4:35 Express. Hey, it started at 25 to 5. How marvellous that. And quite frankly, it was poor, even though I'd had a number of years shouting and screaming off a stage to all these kids. There was a hell of a lot to learn.
Yeah, it's a very different thing, isn't it?
But when the real opportunity, I was getting better. I was getting better because I was determined to. The real opportunity, I was in my first flat. I think I was 19, something like that. And I got a phone call from John Getgood, who was a producer at Radio Stoke, and said, our afternoon presenter hasn't turned up. How do you fancy your big moment, you know? And that was it. That was the moment when I said, of course, yes. And by that time, I'd gained enough confidence to hold this audience properly, Introduce news, introduce contributors into different slots into this programme that was owned by somebody else. And I never left it. It's true, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It's true, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It's true, oh yeah, 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 yeah. This is the law on your local station. 96.1
Till 10 to 6 with this week's number 5 sound. It's got to be Kids of Fame and a track called Star Maker. Lost and Found file on the way, and your dedications too, plus top news items of the day. And loads.
You were just 21 years of age when Radio 1 came calling for the very first time. What a thrill.
Well, you can imagine. I thought it was a hoax, actually. And in fact, it's not the first time I thought it was a hoax. We'll probably talk about the second time later on. But no, it was serious. And the reason why I thought it was serious quickly is because they were moving Radio 1 around the country to discover bands in different areas. And, you know, they chose me to sort of represent Stoke, but presenting a show for Radio 1 from Stoke that week and featuring local bands and playing other stuff too. Well, I absolutely loved it, by the way. And amazingly, they taught me so much in a week. You know, and it was sticking because it was coming from these guys who eventually I wanted to work with. You know, at that time I thought to myself, I'm just so privileged that somehow, somewhere, somebody has made this happen, because it meant that all the hard work was paying off.
Many thanks to Andy Peebles and Peter Powell, coming to you directly from Wales. It's now exactly 8 o'clock. Hi, this is Bruno from BBC Radio Stoke. Delighted to be with you here on National Radio 1 for the next four evenings.
I'm sure it's exactly the same with a footballer who's been in an academy since he was 7 years old and now finds himself on the Premier League pitch for the first time. I'm sure he, and now of course even she, would be going through that experience of, is this for real? And the reason that you think that is because of the journey, which has been so intense in order to make sure that one day it will happen. And without that intensity and that total dedication, there's a good chance it won't happen.
Splodgeness abounds, and 2 pints of lager and a packet of crisps ends tonight's show. Many thanks to my producer, Chris Lysett. Thanks to you also for listening. I'll catch you tomorrow night at 8, and it's John Peel coming up next after Newsbeat with Steve Cape. Radio 1.
So you do this week in 1980, and then it's the best part of 4 years before you get the ultimate call, if you like. What were you doing in that time? I obviously carrying on at BBC Radio Stoke, but presumably keeping in touch with Radio 1 as well to make sure that they'd not forgotten about you.
Yeah, as much as I could. I wasn't knocking and banging on the door. I mean, I was enjoying what I was doing immensely at Stoke and had a fabulous audience. You know, broke some records in terms of numbers, which is great. Doing and enjoying everything until one day I got a phone call. Well, I didn't get the phone call. It was Marge. I'll never forget Marge. Marge looked after reception, and I'd finished my afternoon show, and we had to do this dreaded PRS form that we have to fill in, and still have to do it, I think. Which could take easily half an hour, 45 minutes, depending on how much music you were playing. But I got this phone call. I was up there by myself in the studio. And she said, Bruno? I said, yeah, I'm Marge. We've got Radio 1, Doreen Davis on the phone. Sorry? Doreen Davis? She didn't know who Doreen was. I knew exactly who Doreen Davis was. She was the head of programmes for Radio 1. Is that Bruno? Yes. Doreen Davis, Radio 1. Is it possible you can come and see us next Wednesday, 3 o'clock, in London at Broadcasting House? No chit-chat, nothing. Simple as that. And I'm thinking, hang on, this is either an amazing wind-up or this is something that I'll never forget in my life. I said, yes, that would be great, Doreen. Thank you. Yes. Very good. We'll get somebody to give you more detail, call you tomorrow and all this. Put the phone down. I should have been recording this local artist. We had a recording studio upstairs. I love, you know, mixing and trying to, you know, record stuff. And unfortunately, he was unloading his van as I went downstairs with all of his kit that we were going to take in an escalator to the fourth floor. And I just had to say to him, I'm really sorry, but I just got...
You lost it.
I just lost it. I said, I'll take you to a Chinese. There was a Chinese restaurant next door. And I said, I promise we'll record this another day. So, we went for a Chinese and got drunk. Radio 1, good afternoon.
So, Sunday the 15th of January, 1984. The first of a 2-week stint depping for Steve Wright. And you never really look back after that. Malcolm Brown was your producer in those days. Any memories of Malcolm?
Malcolm, yeah. What a great guy, you know. What a legend. So funny, so smart, so intelligent. Great guidance. Had this knack of making you feel comfortable. Just a, you know, really knew what he was doing, you know.
Thing is, obviously, by September of 1984, you were taking over the Tea Time Show. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But before that, people forget that you had a couple of months doing the early show.
Good morning. It's the 9th of July, 1984.
I do recall that. Now, that's the reason why I had to stay in the haunted house, as it was known, Langham. Am I right? Yes. The Langham, which is now the Langham Hotel, where you'd be... You're right, I remember
that. It's all
that.
Coming back to
it's
you now.
It's all coming back.
This is why I'm here.
Yeah. That is exactly. now, that place was haunted because I was in this horrible bedroom, almost felt as if I was in prison, and these huge, what were either water pipes going through this building kept rattling and banging, almost as if they were pressure locks or rats or whatever. It was pretty rough.
The Radio 1 Roadshow.
Okay, let's picture the scene. It's the 28th of May, 1984, the day that you did your very first Radio 1 Roadshow, and it was one to remember in front of an enormous crowd at Haydock Park.
I'd arranged a helicopter for that from the owner of Alton Towers at the time. I knew
this was how you made your entrance.
Yeah, this is how I made the entrance. There was other people on board. I'm just trying to remember who came with.
Well,
us
you did it with Peter Powell and Gary Davis.
Yeah, it was probably Gary and Peter were sharing the chopper straight.
First
in.
Ever roadshow. What a way to enter.
Well, there were 50,000 there that day, and. The traffic jams all the way back to Liverpool and everywhere else were just insane. And my family were desperately trying to get there, and they never actually made it.
Yeah, that wouldn't be too far for them on a normal day to get, of course, M6 or whatever, you know.
But that was one serious event. It was amazing.
The Road Show. On Radio 1.
What was the mileage one more time?
41 miles.
41 miles. Now, we've got three contestants on the stage. Your name is?
Sharon Peoples.
Right, 41 miles. How long did it take us to travel 41 miles?
An hour and 35 minutes.
An hour and 35 minutes. That's your guess. Hello, what's your name?
Savine Poland.
Okay, and you would travel 41 miles. How quickly could you do it?
An hour and 25.
An hour and 25. All very close guesses here. Hi, what's your name?
James Ford.
Nice to see you down the front there earlier on. Okay, and how long do you think it took, 41 miles?
An hour and 15 minutes.
An hour and 15 minutes. All right, smiles.
Well, it was 1 hour, 22 minutes.
Whoa!
I think the young lady who was the closest would 1 hour, 25 minutes. So she wins the Radio 1 goodie bag.
Thanks very much. Congratulations to our winner. Thanks very much to Smiley Miley!
What was great about the road show is that it was consistent. You know, it truly was not just the radio station and the personalities on the road. It brought a lot of fun and laughs with it, a lot of wind-ups, Reedy and all the stuff he was doing. But also the brand, you know, it extended the brand into reality. You know, it was very rarely did you ever have a chance to get involved with the heartbeat of Radio 1 outside of a radio set. And that was the reason why it was so popular.
So then we get to September 1984, and you were given your own daily Tea Time programme, taking over as well from Peter Powell, who was one of the biggest names on the network.
Van Halen has jumped. That's my second favourite of 84. You two have come out on top for me with Pride in the Name of Love. Again, one of those bands that have been struggling hard to make it to the top, and that's exactly what they've done, especially this year. And Judith, the programme sec, has said on the scripts here, typed out very neatly, sensible boy. Judith's mad on you too, so am I. Have a listen to this.
That was a massive moment for me, for obvious reasons, because it meant that I had my own daytime show on Radio 1. I suppose that was always the thing I was working for.
Now, the birthday box, for the first time in 85, we'll be drawing your birthday request for at least one at about 12 minutes past five. And if it is that your birthday request is drawn from the birthday box, it means that you get the birthday box prize, all right? Over the last 3 weeks, you've been sending in your requests, which is great, and we wish you the best of luck. Might be an extra birthday present for you. If it is your birthday today, many happy returns of the day.
Last thing, it was amazing to be taking over that show. I also felt a little bit browned off that Peter was not going to be there for my own enjoyment when I was listening to Radio 1. You know, I got a lot of respect for Peter and everything he's done, and particularly at that time. And in fact, before Radio 1, as I was saying earlier on when I was listening to Radio Luxembourg as a kid, you know, he has such a sunny disposition on the air. Quite rare, that. And extremely original.
Yeah.
Peter and I worked, for instance, when we were promoting the town halls, and my dad, you know, Peter was one of the Radio 1 DJs that we'd paid to turn up. Lovely guy. Came back to the house, enjoyed a bit of hospitality and so on. Didn't have to do that. Remember it vividly, gave me some advice.
And knowing him as well, he would have been one of the first people patting you on the back saying, well done.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Chaka Khan, I feel for you. There's no move there. It's still at number 21. Down 9 to number 20, Shakin' Stevens with Teardrops. Down 1 to 19, I Should Have Known Better, Jim Diamond. Up 1 to number 18, Spandau Ballet, Round and Round.
And it was the first time on Radio 1 that we got to hear you running down the top 40 that you would become so synonymous with. The Tuesday night chart rundown, as it was in those days.
No move at number 3, We All Stand Together, Paul McCartney and the Frog Chorus. And no move at number 2, Last Christmas and Everything She Wants from Wham. No move for Band-Aid.
That's the reason why, I suppose, I ended up becoming quite well known as a top 40 DJ. I like pace in radio. I like urgency. You can't often do that when you're just having a chat to your audience and, you know, introducing a song and telling them about something else or whatever. You know, that's close. That's sort of one-to-one. But I do like American radio, as it used to be. No matter what these guys in the US used to do in the 1970s, for instance, Wolfman Jack, Emperor Roscoe, you know, these were serious players, incredibly talented, what I call pace merchants, that bring the sense of energy through a piece of plastic, which is your radio set. Difficult to do.
More music! Bruno Brooks on Radio 1.
This is Bruno Brooks with the UK Top 40, the most important stereo countdown of the best-selling singles in Great Britain. Compiled for the BBC by Gallup and used exclusively by Radio 1, Top of the Pops and the British record industry. There's a new entry at
number 40,
Susie and the Banshees.
And so that was the natural propensity towards the Top 40, to try and present that in such a way that you almost, even key changes and the way I was presenting it, and for reason, just to create energy, a sense of immaculate timing, a polish, but also a full stop when somebody can go...
Oh, now, you see, let me talk to you about that, because I can remember in those days when you were doing the Top 40 on Radio 1 and I was doing the chart show on Radio Luxembourg, we would, on regular intervals, bump into each other. And I felt that I knew you well enough to ask you, purely from a professional point of view, why it was you left a gap after the jingle that said which Top 40 position that song was in before you would play the record. And then you would let it fade before you came bounding in with that high-energy style of yours. And I remember being stunningly impressed with the answer, which perhaps you'd be you know, kind enough to share with us on the program right now.
Well, look, as presenters, DJs, personalities, we are judged by how successful we are. The barometer in terms of how successful you are is how many people are listening to your show. Now, the Top 40, I think at the time I took it over, probably had, I don't know, 4, 5, 5.5 million listeners, we think, something like that. And that's great. That's a lot of people. But for me, it's all about the audience first. Because if you don't understand what your audience would really like, then there's no chance you're going to even start to deliver even a little bit more than you normally deliver. So I'd worked it out. There was something missing. Or there was something I could do to take this audience through the roof. Some common denominators. Music at that time was far more expensive than it is now. And that meant one thing. They couldn't afford it, and it meant that they wanted to record the songs. Now, there is this myth that you can't record a song from the radio. So I decided that there needed to be a new rule, which was a player track. It would always start by itself. You knew where it was going to start. The end point was always the same.
Coast to coast, it's Great Britain's top 40. Higher Love, Stevie Winwood climbs 14 places to 24. At 23, Amityville, The House on the Hill, Love Bug Starsky. And coming up next, a new entry for UB40.
The best sound in Britain, Radio 1,
number 22.
The listener with a tape machine would be going press and record at that moment in time to start to record that track. Now, that's fine until some DJ comes in when he needs to come in for the purpose of his own timing, of his own show, ruin that track. And one of the reasons why it was absolutely essential, I timed that three-hour show to perfection from the beginning to the end to enable listeners to be able to record that and let it fade. And listeners were becoming expert in when they would put the pause button back on, knowing when I was going to come in. So there was almost like a magic connection between us in terms of when that moment was going to happen. And it meant that they could record every single track. So I knew, in principle, that that'd get around, and that was one way of pushing my audience up. And also I wanted to bring as much energy as possible. There was, or any other sprinkling of magical dust I thought was relevant, I would stick in there, because it was all about audience. And some of the audiences over the period, you know, were I won't say what the numbers were, but you know what the numbers were. And they were off the scale in comparison. But it's all about the audience.
All in all, you stayed for a very impressive 10.5 years. How would you sum all that up?
I couldn't think of another job that would actually be so demanding in terms of a diary. Every single day was different. We were doing so many different things, so many different kinds of engagements, mixing with the good and the great. I mean, I remember going to a little drinks party, as an example. It's just a night in the life of Bruno Brooks during the 80s. Little drinks party to a special house somewhere in Mayfair. Walk through the door, the black and white floor, you know, all of that lovely grandeur of the Georgian period. And standing there is Elton John. Hi, Elton, how you doing? George Michael. Hi, George, how you doing? Rod Stewart. Oh, hi, Rod, how you doing? You know, and it goes on, literally from one handshake to another. It's so difficult to explain how special that is, but also normal it is at the same time, because in that period of time, it was happening all the time. These are people that I was listening to the radio, you know, when I was 15, 16, 17, thinking, whatever. Same as Lemmy. When, you know, when I heard Lemmy and Ace of Spades, Motorhead on the radio for the first time.
Number 38.
I remember that moment when it happened. What I heard was incredible. And then we became good friends. You know, we'd go out for a drink. Hey, yeah, how's it going, mate? Yeah. You know, which one of my lagers do you want from my belt, Bruno? No, it's okay, mate. I'll have a Cardi.
Must have been a Stokes. Bruno, thanks ever so much for joining me. It's very, very nice to see you, as always.
It's always a pleasure to be here. Good to see you again, mate.